Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody. This is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from Booger County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. And our guest is Grandfather Ed McGaugh. He's here to tell us about his new book and stuff. It's been out for a few months, Grandfather Ed.
Okay, first off, we dropped the title Grandfather Ed. I hate that.
All righty.
Grandfather Wallace Blackout will love that title, but I'm still, I can hunt and walk miles, and I've been 7 times down to Iowa, so until I quit going to Iowa and quit hunting pheasants every year, you can just call me Eagle Man.
All righty.
If I could pick a topic, I'd kind of like to talk about the environment.
Sure.
And in my latest book, Nature's Way, I cover heat, thin, gone, and too many. Heating of the planet, thinning of the ozone, gone resources, and too many people over the population. Now, I'm kind of naive at times, and I was shocked to learn, and this is how naive I am, it's been going on all the time, heavy, and I wasn't even aware of it, but the right, the Christian right, or the right wing, or whatever you want to call them, are heavily into denying that there is a planetary environmental dilemma. And are you aware of that?
They're denying a lot of things. I was just talking with Chief Pappy Hicks of the Texas Cherokees last night, And he was telling me that, you know, back when in the 80s, when the Sandinista thing was going on, that he would send in, he was down in Central America, you know, working with the guys that we consider to be the good guys.
Yeah.
And he said that they would send in reports of Arabs and Chinese people, you know, down there. And he said the government didn't want to know.
Huh.
And if they knew, they had to do something about it. So, yeah, they're in denial about a lot of things.
Okay. Well, first off, to the audience here, I want to get that across, that I'm quite a patriotic American. And I don't like to be see people condemn someone that if you haven't walked in their shoes, if you have not equated what they have done, then I think, you know, people should hold their tongue. Well, I volunteered for Korea, the USMC, enlisted man, and came out of there a corporal, went to college, GI Bill, did my duty for my country, and gave away a 13-month tour over there. And I think the Iraqi tours are far too long. The 12 months of 13 months of the combat area is plenty for any young man. But anyway, I went back in and became a pilot, an F-4 pilot, and wound up volunteering for a combat tour in Vietnam prior to my law school. I was accepted into law school in 66, but I turned it down when everybody else was bailing out. And I did a combat tour and did my 110 missions. So therefore, yeah, I don't think anybody can say, well, he doesn't love his country. No, I love the Corps and I love the country and I love my native spirituality and a lot of things. So that's the kind of man that I am. Now we'll go forward here. Bill Moyers gave a brilliant speech, an acceptance speech for some award from Harvard Medical School. And that is where I first became tipped off as to how far the right wing has gone in denying the environmental observation of hundreds of brilliant scientists on the four subjects I just gave. Heat, thin, gone, and too many. Let's give it those title: heating, planet, thinning, ozone, gone, resource, too many people. And we probably could add water onto that. Now, the right wing, they're so locked up into their prophecy from 2,000 years ago that they're looking at the coming of the four horses of the apocalypse as a fulfillment of prophecy. And I don't look at it that way. I think it's something to be headed off. We have generations unborn, that's an Indian term, generations unborn, that we have to live for. We ideally should have the world that they come into be the same as the world that we were fortunate enough to come into.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I was carried at 22 and I was 10, 12 years old. I was able to hunt rabbits. Those days, you could go in a rancher's land and the rancher, boys, get them rattlesnakes out of here and be careful you don't get bit. And you get all them cottontails you want. And we had a beautiful life. Swim in a creek. I never swam in a swimming pool. I swam in a rapid creek. You know, beautiful thing, found rocks, so, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyhow, those are the beauties that I would love to see my children have. And yet, my children don't have that. No, they can still fly fish in the Black Hills. They can still do things. But there's poor city kids, and most of the people listening right here to your radio show do not have access to pheasant hunting, cottontail, deer hunting, et cetera, et cetera. The beauties. You don't even have to hunt. Just the beauties of going out into Mother Nature, and that is such an added grace to your children's lives. In fact, everybody on this show here, take your children camping this summer, canoeing. Get out in Mother Earth, and you'd be surprised how, you know, beautiful that is. So, anyway, that's the type of person I am. So I take offense, or I'm disgusted with the religious rights attitude towards denying that the environment is crumbling and that we can just bring in all the endless coal trains, we can do everything George Bush says, and his Republican Congress, just to make a lot of people richer and to care less about Mother Earth, because Mother Earth will bite back, and she's starting to now, just to report recently, a couple days ago, about how this huge Antarctic area, the size of Texas, is ready to melt, and it could bring the seas up 16 inches. Now, this is not poppycock goofball talk. This is actual scientific reports. And in my book, Nature's Way, I don't have that because that's recent in my book, Nature's Way. But I have four chapters of Heat, Thin, Gone, and Too Many, and strictly science measurement, science observation. And what's the Indian take on observation and science? We respect science because science allows us to directly observe. We don't believe in anything. Us North believe in anything unless we see it, because that's what Creator made. That's the opening salvo here.
Excellent. Excellent. Yes, things are... Yeah, the whole idea that you can't change the outcome by changing your ways. And you know, there is prophecy in the Bible. It says that at one point, that those that are killing Mother Earth will themselves be killed. I'll have to take a look and see if I can find that. I believe it's in the book of Revelation.
Well, I don't take much stake in the Bible. That's where you're at. That's fine. In fact, they call us the Antichrist. I call them the Anti-Mothers.
I'm just trying to point out some things to these people. All they hear is what their preachers say.
Oh, okay.
And they don't... they don't actually hear what was actually taught. They want to pick and choose rather than getting in there studying and
well, to me, I don't even go near that Bible. I don't go near it because it's written by a white man, for one thing, and a lot of white men. And
okay.
White men, I hate to be prejudiced about it, but there's a lot of good, sound, beautiful, extremely intelligent, brilliant white people. Look at Einstein. Look at Japanese, a whole bunch of people are just brilliant. So, I mean, I give them their due. But when it comes to me, depending on a book written by the Taliban, and they lived like Taliban, they acted like Taliban,
yep.
They didn't look like Taliban, I place no stock in it. I place higher than anything written by man, Creator's nature. And it's very difficult for the white people, especially Christian people, to understand this. That I believe in a Creator, I think they believe in a Creator. Let's do. And they have sort of manified God, whereas we do not. Now, I don't want to get a big argument of which is which here, but we're dealing with mystery.
Mm-hmm.
We say, we don't know. They say, we know. Well, that's fine. Good, good, good. But when you get back into the results of, they become so dictatorial and so all-knowing, and that is what causes wars. And look at the war we got right now. We got two types of people. We got the Muslims, Islam, they know everything. We got the Christians, they know everything. And we got a horrendous war going on and tremendous hatred. And we're killing each other right and left. Whereas American Indian, he simply says, look, I don't know who Creator is, but I think there is one. And I think it's vast, I think it's big, and yet it's benevolent. It's very considerate. Look at what God gave us. So we're spiritual people. We are very, very spiritual. But we base our teachings on what Creator makes. In other words, what God directly makes in nature is the basis of our spirituality. What I see from what I've learned from the white man, I've been around long enough, and I even was forced into his thing when I was a child because they banned our religion.
Mm-hmm.
What I see is they base their religious beliefs on a man-written book, which, well, you don't really know who wrote it. I mean, there's different kinds of versions. The Mormons got one where they get their own planet and they get several wives and you just go on and on and on. And whereas Mr. Indian, he's solid. Creator made nature. Birds, animals, even wolves, they share. They do not lie. They do not overuse.
And by the way, not to interrupt, but the thing about the Mormons is all that stuff you just mentioned, believe it or not, Mormonism and the Book of Mormon are two completely different things. I talk about this all the time. None of that stuff about having people getting planets. And,
well, one of them's got planets.
We're talking about... Joseph Smith got involved in something other than Mormonism and added that to the religion and the people. And he was even told at a certain point that if he didn't stop talking to certain men, the church would go into condemnation. He continued talking to these guys, and
so they got on him on that.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay. And then they got off on a tangent, and because all that stuff is not really supposed to be part of the religion, but that's just another story.
But there are many Mormons that do believe that way. But I've talked to many, and they told me I'd get my own planet and a bunch of chicks and stuff like that.
Do
your sex plans go on with you to the spirit world? You know, that's so foolish. Every corpse I've seen, in a funeral home, of course, and I've seen some, you know, dead ones in combat, I never probed around, but I assumed that the sexual organs was on every corpse. And I assumed that they weren't working. I didn't, you know, check, but anyhow, and I assumed that when we go to spirit world, that the body stays back here. And so I think that the only thing that goes on in the spirit world is the mind, or the thought. And what use have we got for sexual organs up there in the spirit world, and yet these Islamics are all getting 72 virgins, the Mormons are getting these extra wives.
Yep.
it's so utterly foolish. It's just fascinating how fairy tale-ish and mythology. You talk about mythology; they got far more mythology than us American Indians. Who we don't even believe in a Satan. We don't believe in a devil. Why? Never saw one. And I'll be darned if I believe in a white man's devil. I believe that humans can be very bad, but that's their own thinking. And but I've never yet seen a devil. I've been on at night and all this. So I like my spirituality. I really do. And to me, it's far more wholesome. I actually don't think that you can be an Indian. I'll put this right out to all, especially those Oklahoma Indians. I don't think they're Indians. The ones, if you don't believe how your ancestors, like the Jews, if you do not believe the Jewish way, and I've had many Jews tell me this, they say they're not Jews. And even in Israel, you cannot hold office unless you are a Jewish believer. And I think that's pretty good for a definition of a Jew. I think we American Indians should do the same thing. I think if you're 1/8 or 1/16 or 1/32, you're more Indian than a full-blood that doesn't believe in what Wakantaka, Six Powers, Four Directions, ultimate creator, making everything, and then we learn from that that the animals are holy, all things are holy. If you don't believe that way, to me, you're not an Indian.
The vast majority of my people are Baptists, Cherokee.
Then I would consider them. Now they're considered them. We have an argument there, but don't you see where I'm coming from? The Jews are. I think the Jews got a good idea. I really do. And unless you're in a democracy, I suppose, like you could say we're American, and you can believe any way you want to. That's fine. But I think when we get right down to really clarifying an American Indian, that's my own personal, and I know I'm a minority, but I think these real traditional Indians will agree with me. In fact, I've had many a traditional Indian. We talked about that, and they agree. They said, yes, that really should be the term. I mean, if you don't believe according to your ancestors, how in the world can you call yourself an Indian?
That's your culture, is what you're...
Huh? Well, your
culture and religion defines your ethnicity.
Yes. Say that again now.
Your culture
and your religion.
And your religion define your ethnicity.
Your ethnicity. I like that. I hope I can remember that.
I mean, I may have my terms wrong, but, you know, I think that's really defines who you are, is how you think. Well, in the Cherokee way, you were a full blood, even if you were a white person that was adopted. If you have the Cherokee mindset,
but
you believe in Cherokee,
he would believe in Cherokee ceremony, wouldn't he?
Yeah. If you were a white person, white people could acculturate. We have people of all colors actually that were part of us.
I would consider it would be nice to adopt him to make a little formality because, you know, we're so ceremonial. We're very ceremonial leaning. But if you had an adopted white person or a black person, Hassamas, and they believed, like say us Sioux, now I don't expect Cherokees to believe in the Sundance or the Sundance. Oh, that's just, the Sundance is just a form. It's not, it's a part of our spirituality. You don't have to Sundance to be a Sioux Indian. And most Sioux do not Sundance. It's a too arduous ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
Only a few do it. But if you respect it, but if you sweat lodge, I think that most anybody claiming to be Indian, they should at least approach and try to do sweat lodge, you know.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. I have a message here from 1975 from John Wayne. It comes right out of today's headlines. So you Indian folks who are following the progressive trend in politics, you're following the people that supported slavery. You're following the people that have enslaved you ever since the Civil War. Listen to John Wayne.
You know, it's a funny thing, the Indians now, this AIM group have started something that now they're against me for some reason, but I am the only man in pictures that always gave them their human dignity. I never was in a picture. I never allowed myself at any time to do anything that would take their human dignity away from them, and that to me is the most important thing in a man's. I have found that a certain type that calls himself a liberal, I always thought I was a liberal. I came up terribly surprised one time when I found that I was a right-wing conservative extremist. When I have listened to everybody's point of view that I ever met, and then decide how I should feel. I mean, but this so-called new liberal group, Jesus, they never listen to your point of view, and they make a decision as to what you think, and they're articulate enough and in control of enough of the press to force that image out for the average person. For some reason, maybe it's these pictures, they have not been able to do that with me. In spite of what they say, people have not taken sides that I'm a, you know, it hasn't affected my career in popularity, let's say. In spite of the fact that they've tried to make it do it. There isn't a hell of a lot to that we can do to change human behavior. We keep making laws to try and change human behavior. You can't do it. I think you can accept it and feel how you would feel in that position. conned into Keynesianism and socialism now. But it isn't going to stop the selfishness of human behavior. It isn't going to stop the greed. If you give, take $20 and give a dollar to every son of a bitch in a room, and come back a year later, one of the bastards will have most of the money. I mean, it's just human nature, and they're not going to they're not going to whip it with a lot of laws. I think when you make people conscious, as communication gets better, and you make people conscious of somebody in trouble, starving or something like that, the average person will help. But of course now they've got so damn many charities and there's so much professionalism, you know, there's if you have a charity, you hire some professionals to work up the charity, and by the time you get the money, you get $4 for the recipient and $400 for the administrators. So, I mean, Christ, I think there are people who try to affect a thinking where they know more than some other son of a bitch and try to put a false impression on what human nature is. Christ's sakes, we have proven that we go back to hope at the first opportunity. Just throw out a little fish and bam, they're out there ready to grab it. So we are optimistic. We have to be optimistic. Christ, what else would there be in life if you lose optimism?
And I think if a white person would do that and respect the Indian way and also be sharing and generous, all the traits that we deeply, deeply appreciate, bravery and courage, etc., loyalty to your country, loyalty to the United States of America, as long as it doesn't go around, you know, really hurting people
sure.
that are innocent. And I think a vote, all that stuff, but still, if you believe it that way, I'd say that a white person was as much Indian as any folk.
Well, I tell my people. Also,
that's how I would look at it.
Carping about, the whites did this, whites did that. I go back and tell them, hey, look, Our ancestors fought all that out, and in 1866, we decided we were going to be friends, we were going to be one nation, and we were going to stop fighting amongst ourselves, this is mm-hmm. the Indians in Oklahoma. And the oddly enough, the only group that in Oklahoma that reserved the right to fight among inside their tribe was the Cherokees, because there's still this thing going on between the the faction that took political power in Tahlequah and my people, the Chickamaugas.
Is that where you're at now? Are you in Tahlequah?
I'm in Missouri.
Oh, you're in Missouri. I'm okay. But you're out of Tahlequah, though, originally?
No, myself, no. No. My people, the Chickamauga seceded from the Cherokee Nation in 1777.
But they were Cherokee a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
They were
the original. The Chickamauga were mainly a wolf. See, the wolf and the bear clan was the original Cherokee clan, and then the wolf was next. And the wolf clan was actually 50% of the Cherokee Nation and was the military protectors. And when the chiefs started to become corrupt, we just walked out in one day. In 1777, en masse, walked out, and then we fought, declared war on the United States government, And then we repatriated back into the Cherokee Nation right after about 1801, and then
that was after the Long Walk, huh?
That was before, and
before.
Then a lot of our most of the traditional Cherokees moved to where I live here in southern Missouri and northern Arkansas. We had a reservation
from the east, right?
Huh?
From the east.
We had a reservation set up in a...
They were a huge tribe, weren't they, originally?
Yeah.
Back in the 1600s, 1700s. Now, we Sioux were in the Carolinas. We think that to the southwest of us was the Cherokees. We're pretty right on that, aren't we?
Yeah.
You were southwest of the... You were in Georgia in a huge area.
That's right.
Alabama and northern Alabama and then up Kentucky, and that whole area was yours, wasn't it?
The story is there was a conflict between your people and mine, and you folks moved out onto the plains.
Anyhow, we had the Iroquois on one side, and we had the Cherokees, but we had such a big buffer, and there was so much land in those days, that we got far enough away from each other that we say that we had little enemies, few enemies, and then the ocean was, the disease came from the ocean, and that was the settlements of the Raleigh and the white traders, you know, up and down the coast, and that was disease, and then so we saw the great danger. And then the, what's their names, I can't think of that big tribe, too, to the west of us, they let us pass through, and we passed through the Ohio River Valley, and then we hit the Mississippi, and then we, like your tribe, broke off from your main tribe. The main body of Sioux had various, the Crows broke off from us, the Mandan, the Kansa, the Arkansa, the Missouri, the Iowa, those are all Sioux words, and they, but they're Sioux and based in language. And then the main body came up to Mississippi, and then, of course, we went out on the plains.
That's right. Quapaw did also. I have some friends
at Quapaw, yeah. And if, I don't know about Ponca or not, but Ponca could be Sioux in word. And Omaha is Sioux. And Winnebago, well, they were, I think they were Chippewa. I think they broke off from the Chippewas. And then the Chippewa named us Nadawasu, and which is a French word, and corruption of the Chippewa word, which means enemies or snakes, which we really were. We were enemies to the Chippewa, and the bigger snakes were the Iroquois, and they called them a similar term, too.
That was their symbol.
What's that?
That was one of their symbols.
What, snake?
The snake people, yeah.
Oh, well, they call them that. The Iroquois had a symbol for that, huh?
Yeah, I believe that was one of their symbols. See, there was a group of people. See, we followed the... the really, really ancient story is that that your people were the turtle people, and that you came up. That we all came up from the south.
Did we?
And together. Well, actually, the turtle people came up first, followed by the snake people, and snake people being the Iroquois and the what the ethnologists call the Cherokee Creek.
Well, here's what puzzles me now. Cherokees, Sioux, and Iroquois are fairly tall people. Now, and then you take a look at the southern tribes, and I mean, we're going to talk Central America and that, South America tribe. They're little bitty guys. They're about the size of Viet Cong. And you look at the Mexican people that come up here, they're Indians, but they won't admit it. I don't know if you got many Indians in Missouri, but I mean Mexicans. But we have a whole bunch of Minnesota come up and work, and they're small. They're really good workers. Now, where the hell do we get our height from? I think that we must have intermarried with some of the Celtics in that rover.
Well, the Catoosas, the religious authorities of the Cherokees say that after we migrated up here the second time, which was 1,500 years ago. That we migrated to where I am right now, which is the Ozark Plateau, and that we moved east and northeast, southeast, and we moved toward the east, and eventually, you know, all the way from Pennsylvania down into Georgia was our range.
Pennsylvania down into Georgia.
But our skeletal structure is completely and language is completely different.
Well, you are tall people, aren't you?
Well, Dr. Kelly came down from in the 30s, down from Harvard, and take a look at the bones of the ancestors, and he couldn't help but note that our skulls were dolichocephalic, which means they're long-headed, and he said that the Cherokee Creek people were... all the way, you know, the Appalachian chain all the way from Alabama to Pennsylvania, our graveyards were surrounded by people of literally of a different skeletal structure. And he says that the only people...
So you're different. You're different from the little bitty guys.
Well, they the only people that we correspond with is the Phoenician people. And, you know, and that goes along with our stories that we migrated here in boats, that we lived on an island off the coast of South America that sank, and we had warnings, some of us. Our elders...
Is that Atlantis? I thought Atlantis was further north.
Could be. It'd be or Mu.
Huh?
Or
Mu, huh?
And that our elders were messing around with something called white fire, because, you know, we're the people that mess around with crystals. And, you know, crystal technology, you know.
Well, crystals were all over your area, though, too.
That's right. And,
God, you know,
so something happened.
God made crystals, you know that.
We caused an imbalance, and something happened. Our island sank, and we had to leave in boats.
Uh-huh.
And, but that's, and in 1750, Atakulakula, who was one of our chiefs, got the whole nation together and said that, you know, we moved here from across
from Mu, huh?
Ocean.
Is that the island name, Mu?
Originally across the Eastern Ocean. See, we migrated all over the place. And he says,
okay, how about Avalon or something like that? Was there anything that stuff?
Avalon? I believe so.
Avalon was, or some countries over there. The people, I mean, I don't, you know, I don't really, I just go back to, you know, Carolinas and possibly Long Island.
But they, you know, that's an explanation of why our skeletal structure, you know, and why they find, you know, Proto-Hebrew inscriptions on stones in our graveyards.
Uh-huh.
There's
uh-huh.
something.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, you know, apparently we are Abrahamic people that migrated here a long, long, long
possibly.
Ago.
Possibly.
And and came.
The Cherokees are pretty light complexed, the ones that I've seen.
Yeah.
You know,
well, they said we fought a war with the mound builders, which would have been about 1,200 years ago. And that's about the time that Madoc got here with from Wales. It was about 1200, something like that. And that we intermarried with them to stop the war. We intermarried, and they said that the Ketua elders say that after that we moved into the Ohio Valley, and we fought a really nasty war with the Iroquois, and to stop that war. Uh-huh. To stop that war, we agreed to stop speaking our own language and speak theirs.
Well, your size does not lie. And the size of those eastern tribes, which includes the Cherokees, that cannot be denied. Now, there we get back to observation, direct
uh-huh.
observation. So I think that... Well, there's a good possibility we all three come from the same spot because
uh-huh.
there's a lot of similarity, and we're definitely in size, you know. And I think there's probably, and you know, we got way more prominent noses than your southwestern Indians and even your west coast Indians.
Uh-huh.
They have a more of a flatter nose, and we have, you know, we got some pretty good sized noses on our people, your people too. They're more like we say Nordic noses, or
uh-huh.
they. Maybe they got Cherokee or Ogallala noses, you know, the Swedes and the Germans and that bunch. But either way, it's just a term. But you go to Mount Rushmore or Crazy Horse Mountain, and on the wall you see those old-time Indians from the Custer Battle. They got their pictures up on the wall, and those guys had very prominent noses. And I'm sure what Cherokees I've seen, I've yet to see a little smashed-down Viet Cong nose, you know, unless they had an accident or something like that. So those features, I say, discerns us a little differently than a lot of these tribes here in America.
Sure.
Any other observation?
Well,
interesting.
Chief Hicks down in the Cherokee Nation of Mexico has got some really interesting stuff on his website, CherokeeNationMexico.com. He said we lived alongside the Mayans, and, you know, our civilization broke up about the same time theirs did, about 1,500 years ago.
Well, now, Aztecs are big. Aztecs are big people. I'm a real tall guy. I just met at the Denver Indian Market Show. And he's an artist and big guy. And he was Aztec. And he was telling me, yes, he said, we're related to you. Here they have the same colors as black elk. Black elk has red east, yellow south, black west, and white north. That's the colors I prefer also. And here the Aztecs, the black elk, and this tribe down here in Minneapolis, the real rich ones that make about $1 million a year per person over 18, the Shakopee Manawakans, they are also red, white, black, and yellow. I mean red, yellow, black, and white. And
interesting.
So, but the Aztecs were tall people, from what this guy is telling me. And I probably, if there's a few Aztec listeners on here, they'll probably verify this one way or another.
Well, there's ceramic busts on the Cherokee Nation of Mexico website showing a people that wore something like a turban, and they had rather than having the convex Mayan nose. They had the concave nose, kind of a skeet up nose. And I
you must get feedback then, don't you?
Well, yeah, one of the first things I was told was that the Wapatieta clan, and that's actually a misnomer, that's the it's really the Kitu'a clan, the Savannah clan, Wapatieta is really the original clan, had a kind of a ski jump nose. And that and they also had webbed fingers.
This Aztec Indian too had noses like we do, you know, more prominent.
Yeah, that's
noses.
Right.
I mean, when I was little, I wished I had one of them little small Mexican noses. You know, when you're a teenager, you're all nose, you know, you're really
homely.
And I wish the hell I would have had a little bitty nose.
Well,
I hope some reader, some listener would at least, if they're Aztec, if they got any comments, I hope they send you an email and make your comments.
I'm sorry, I got you off on that tangent.
Well, that's no, it's all interesting. It's just, you know, these things are all interesting. You can't, you know, we can't just sit here and complain about the environment. It's, you know, I think these other features, and I think people like it if you say, well, the Mandan went up, they broke off at the Missouri River, And the Mandan are big people, like the Hunkpap. The Hunkpapas are bigger than a lot of our other Sioux tribes. And the Mandans are and real big guys, and they also are very, very Caucasian-looking, the Mandans. And yet they speak Sioux language. I stayed in their motel there, and it was Four Bears Motel, and Ma To To Pa is, some of us spell the D, and they spell it with a T or a reverse. I can't remember exactly, but they have a Sioux-based language.
Well, I got on a I was up in Minot and training in the trucking vocation, and I had to something happened and I had to be put on a bus and shipped back to Chattanooga to get a new trainer, and this full blood Indian got on, and carrying of all things a buffalo skull, and the guy had been drinking. And a guy had been drinking, and I thought to myself, oh man, he's going to get in trouble. I better set him down because you know the bus drivers will put you off. And come on, sit down here. You know, we started talking. I said, hey, I said, is it true the stories about your people and Madoc and the whites? He says, oh yeah. He says, we know that that there was these white people that came about 1,000 years ago, and he said his mother was the last Mandan speaker. And they were transcribing the language from her. But and then we stopped at a bus station, and I was trying to keep him from drinking more on it because he did have more beers, and I didn't want to get thrown off. And we put the buffalo skull into a locker, and as we were doing so, a piece of it from the back of the skull fell off into my hand. And he says, "Oh, he says that's supposed to stay with you now." So I've still got it.
Yeah. Well, spirits probably did that.
But they remember.
One comment I'd like to make is that it seems that there's a basic commonality of spiritual belief amongst your northeastern tribes. I mean, I think they generally had a commonality of a great spirit. Wouldn't you think so? I mean, like a huge creator, higher power, but a mystery.
Oh, yeah.
They seem to find that commonality amongst all of northern North America and predominantly from the Northeast, and the value system too. They were very, very alike in value system. You know, sharing, generosity, bravery, courage, honesty. They carried honesty and truth so much further than the white people do that we look at truthfulness as so different. You know, like an Indian, if you ask him a question, who is God? Most Indians that I know, the traditional ones, think that they would be lying if they said anything other than I don't know. They think by saying I don't know, that's a more truthful answer, and that's how far they carry truth. They will not comment on something if they do not know the subject real well. Like they're skinning a deer and they know what's best, they'll tell you that. But when you ask them a question, who is God, they'll say I don't know, but we think it exists. And that's what I like about the Indian way, is that they do admit to mystery. And they don't pompously always claim, like the white man to me, as my stereotype of the white man, and is that he knows everything. And the way the world is shaping up, he does not know everything.
Yep.
We're in for some very, very difficult times coming up, just by the fact that the white man thought he knew everything. And now our resources are pretty much gone.
Yep.
And our generations unborn are going to pay seriously. And we're becoming so overpopulated in this land. I mean, why do we keep allowing people to come in? You know, God, we got enough here as it is.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond. Put it under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
So I think we need an Indian in charge of the immigration board.
Maybe we should have started 500 years ago.
Yeah. How much time do we have left here?
All you want.
Oh, well, let's see. We've talked a little while here, so. Let's see. Any other subject you want to cover?
Well, tell the folks about your newest book.
On Nature's Way? Mm-hmm. Okay. Nature's Way starts out, the first six chapters, 11 chapters. The first six, Well, naturally, the reader, I think, is very, very curious about the Indian way. So I talk about our history and our values and why we think the way we do. And I can't write a book without Black Elk's vision. So I pop Black Elk's vision pretty well cut down, and I tell them to go to a couple other books if you really want real thorough material on Black Elk's vision. Reading Black Elk's vision itself is good. Black Elk speaks. It's very difficult, and so some books kind of explain it a little bit better, and I think that helps the reader out. So I do that. Then I go into the animals and explain each animal, not every animal we have, but the main ones, and what depth we get from each animal, eagle observation, bear medicine, the orca, intuition, and then I give examples of each animal, some real-life examples. And so the reader is getting pretty orientated now along the Indian path. And then, boom, I go into Chapter 7. Now, I only got four chapters left after Chapter 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And those are the four horses of the apocalypse. The Indian version of, I use this white man's term, apocalypse. That's not an Indian term, but I just use that because the whites are so familiar with that. And it's mostly whites that are reading my book. And so then I go Chapter 7, organized religion. And it might tease some people off, but I'm telling the truth as far as my observations. And I think organized religion has really dropped the ball when it comes to looking at the dangers of the environment. I mean, the dangerous situation, the environment is not waiting to kill us all, but it's how we pushed it. And now the result will be we could have tremendous suffering. I even name names. The Catholic Church bears the brunt of it, but I get into some of the Protestants as well. And I put them on the spotlight. And then, boom, I go on into scientifically, and I I had 100 notes per chapter, scientific notes, really heavy. I had two people help me on that one, had to. And we really went into heating of the planet. We really went into thinning of the ozone. Gone resources, especially oil. And then the last chapter, overpopulation.
Oh, yeah.
1825, I'll just give you some figures, real quick ones. 1825, we reached our first billion. It took a century to reach 2 billion, a century, right around 1920-something, we reached 2 billion. And from that, every 12, 14 years now, we're increasing a billion. We're almost at 7 billion. And when we reach 14 billion, we're just doubling up. It's going to be, and then 28 billion, forget about it. It's just calamity. And you get that, you pretty much punch into your computer now, and in the last two, three, 4 days, it's really heavy on this environmental findings of the scientists,
yep.
Especially on heating of the planet. And so then I end on overpopulation. So that's nature's way. And what's unique about it is that it tells you about a people that kept the planet pristine, their half of it, the entire half, the Western Hemisphere. And then it tells about what's happened and the dilemma we face. And so it's and then I find out that the Christian right is just thinks that prophecy is being fulfilled. They think prophecy is being fulfilled by us fighting in Iraq.
Yeah.
And I don't really think we can afford it. We're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars. And we have so much to do back here, it's unbelievable. And it's not working out in Iraq. It's just not working out. So that's it. That's on nature's way. It's a quickie. Explanation at Barnes and Noble and Amazon.com. They have the case persons if people are interested. I don't like to be a salesman or nothing like that. If you want to read it, they can read it.
It's important, the scientists now. I mean, they're everybody, whether it's the reinsurers, which was are the really big companies behind the insurance company, Swiss Re being the biggest, the Vatican, the Pentagon, NASA. Everybody's talking about climate change. The Gulf Stream is shutting down the climate.
And the Gulf Stream is a very important item there, isn't it? That could change
the world. Oh, yeah. I mean, when the Gulf Stream shuts down, all of a sudden that puts the Great Britain and Northern Europe in the same climate as Labrador. We got...
Really?
Can you imagine if Europe couldn't grow crops anymore? There's a war.
Ooh.
There's a war waiting to happen right there.
Oh, my God. Huh.
Yeah. Yeah, these are the things that are happening. And, the Vatican's, built a big observatory.
Now, there's no prophecy that says that, is there?
About what?
About England and all that becoming like Labrador. There's nothing
As a matter of fact, Fatima 3, the third Fatima prophecy... very closely guarded, and Pope John Paul II, he was asked to comment about it, and he said, if we were to tell you that great sheets of ice were going to be coming down from the north and wiping out entire continents, it would really upset you. So,
what keeps him from telling us?
In other words,
why is he afraid of the truth?
He told us without telling us. And ice ages, volcanism always accompanies ice ages. And so the increase in volcanoes is just another signal we're headed into another ice age. And the Hopi have said a long time ago that things are going to get colder. And it looks like, only a 10-degree difference in the average temperature between now and the time that Seattle was under 5,000 feet of ice.
Mm. So now, this report that mentions something like that, there's only a 10-degree difference. Yeah. Oh, boy. I wish I could live 20, 30 more years. I would really see some interesting things.
Well, the UN, the UN is warning about a locust plague. You know, they got a big problem with locusts in the Middle East. Leprosy is making a comeback. Oceanographers, and you know, all this is tied to the sun also, and what's going on with the sun. And you know, our growing, if you look at the, you know, you've seen those maps in the seed catalogs that come and tell you what zone, you know, for what time to plant. Well,
oh, yeah,
if you look at the growing zones from 4 years ago, you realize that that the zone that the zone that ran through northern Missouri, which is a colder zone before, has moved down to 150 miles south in 40 years.
Good God.
So,
We're in for some interesting times.
Yeah, we sure are.
Fatal, you know, possibly for an advent of fatal times, but it's beginning to show us now. So, there's really no solution except for humans to start realizing. To me, I guess that's why I write books, is I disagree with the religious right. I think that their approach is very, very wrong. And I think that Creator, this great gift that Ultimate has given us, needs to be respected, needs to be cared for. Well, here we have a difference of opinion. The Christian right, and they're sitting back and saying, oh, prophecy is being fulfilled. We're not going to do anything about it, and we're going to keep spewing stuff up. And then what makes it really bad is that they think that their concept of God is going to appear, most likely in the sky, because most people look up, the United States appear in some tunnel or something. But anyhow, he appears in the sky, and it's a he, of course. And they, this great God of theirs concept is going to open up monstrous seams of oil and fuel, and nirvana is all going to come back again.
Yeah.
To me, that's fairy tale.
Well, if they'd have paid attention to... Everybody talks about Revelation, but they missed this one little script, this one little verse in Revelations. John, in 11th chapter of Revelations, verse 18, he writes, the time has come for destroying those who destroy
destroying
the
what?
Earth. The time has come for destroying those who destroy the earth. So you can't say that the Bible... doesn't say that we're supposed to be good stewards over the earth. That's not true.
Oh, good. That's good.
That's not true.
Well, why come the Christian right don't understand that? You know?
Because they don't read their Bibles. They're doing the same thing they did 500 years ago before the printing press, which they're too lazy. You see, because they're so keyed into the written word, they figure, oh, I don't have to do any thinking. Let the theologians... You know, the ones who are...
They're listening to the wrong guys, too.
Oh, yeah. You know, we'll listen to the theologians.
This is a gift from God. This the planet is a gift from Creator.
Yeah.
Gift, G-I-F-T. Now, when people destroy or over-consume or take from this wondrous, loving gift that God gave us, to me, how in the world would God not punish those people? You know, or not at least... You know, reprimand them in some form.
Well, you know, we just saw.
Why give them? Would that guy come down and just to give them? Oh, well, you guys didn't care. But here, choose your oil. And I don't think Creator rewards stupidity. I really don't.
Well, we're seeing the seas rise. You were just talking about that. Okay, let me give you some quotes, Eagle Man. Here's Muhammad writing in the Quran. He said, "And when the seas rise, every soul will know that it hath made ready for the judgment day." Quetzalcoatl, writing in 94 A.D.
Yeah, he's the Indian guy, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. He said, "The balance of nature will be lost when the ocean tides shall obey no shore." Brigham Young said, the second Mormon prophet, he says, "The sea shall heave itself beyond its bounds, engulfing mighty cities." The Hopi said that the majority of the human race will die out in the near future from a plague of fear and despair, and we're starting to see that because people are getting scared. And Isaiah, in the 30th chapter, verse 22, said, "And there shall be upon every high mountain and upon every high hill rivers and streams of water in the day of the great slaughter when the towers fall.
Huh.
Well, we've just had a couple of towers fall recently, too. Hermes, a first century Egyptian, Hermes Trismegistus, said that fortunate is the man who knows how to read the signs of the times, for that man shall escape many misfortunes, or at least be prepared to understand the blow.
Wow, you've done your homework on this stuff.
Well, these are actually sent to me because we've got 300 eyes and ears out there. The Native Prophecy Council are.
You're picking up on the right one.
Yeah, you know,
congratulate you for that. I really appreciate it. Have you got this down? Well, you should.
It's on my website.
Then pop it out to us. Write a paper on this. What you just told.
You bet.
Send it to us an email.
It's too bad when you published your book.
I'd love to have that in there.
A book. You could have had that quote from John and Revelations about the time has come.
Oh, yes.
Oh, man.
Why don't you send me that to me? Because I'm going to do one more called Spirit World.
Oh, my gosh.
Send that to me, and then I'll quote you, give you credits for that.
Well,
that to me and what you just told me. And Spirit World won't come out for a year or so because Harper doesn't pop them out just back-to-back. You know, they give a couple of years breathing room. But on Spirit World, it would fit in real well. So and then I'll give you, put your name in there where you want it, and I'll put that as quoting from you. And also what you just told me about those, Quetzalcoatl and the Saya and that. So that would help get the message across.
It's in your it's in your mailbox now.
Okay, I really appreciate it.
Well, we like you to talk as long as you want to, but if you feel like you're done.
This is good. I think if we leave on those quotes that you had, I think that's very, very powerful.
Yeah.
And I think that, we're really wanting to get the message out here to these listeners. So.
Well, I want to thank
you. Stand here, and I think that it's been very fruitful.
Well, I want to thank you for all the work you do. Folks, Eagle Man probably gives away as many books as he sells. And you want to tell folks about your prison ministry?
Well, the prison, yeah. We gave a lot of books away, especially Eagle Vision. And we get a lot of response from the prisoners all over the United States. So, anyhow, that has been a project, and we felt very successful on it. My partner died now, but he really contributed a lot of money. He was a casino Indian. And we gave, I'd say, several thousand books out of Eagle Vision to the prisoners across the land, so I'm real happy about that. And the prisoners are sitting in that jail cell and the prisons, and they read. And I think getting a good Indian spiritual books. So if you read, no matter what book you read, Black Hawk Speaks or something, turn around and send it to a prison. And I think that you'd be helping a lot of people.
Outstanding.
Okay.
Well, thanks a lot.
Okay, Blue Otter.
Thank you so much, and we'll keep in touch. That stuff's in your mailbox.
Okay, I sure appreciate it. Thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks a lot. Bye. Bye-bye.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow, but tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better, I feel a lot better, and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet, all for $9.99, formerly priced at $29.99. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
You want to get an edge on turning back the clock with just a few pills? Who doesn't? Well, it's no longer science fiction, but science possibility, a potential breakthrough. As I found out firsthand, there may be a way to erase years, at least inside my body. Granted, it's down the road, but some scientists are wondering if a new pill I took might offer a very long life.
It may not look like the Fountain of Youth, but inside this nondescript building, I'm about to become part of an exciting experiment, a kind of guinea pig.
Dr. McCord, okay.
I'm here at the University of Colorado in Denver to meet Dr. Joe McCord, a world-renowned scientist.
This is pretty exciting stuff you're finding, huh?
It is. We're very excited about it.
His latest research could very well unravel the mystery of aging itself. And his decades of experiments may have the potential of adding years to people's lives and possibly prevent chronic diseases like cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. It all centers around this small yellow pill, and for me, it begins with a blood test.
It wouldn't be the first time I've given blood for this company.
They want to check my levels of something called T-bars, which is a rough indicator of a person's actual age. T-bars can identify a condition known as oxidative stress, a kind of measure of the wear and tear on our bodies. Oxidative stress, like the rusting of an engine, is not a good thing.
Bad for the body.
Leading to disease.
Leading to disease and leading to malfunction and, importantly, leading to what we call aging. It is a slow progression of increasing oxidative stress. That's the main characteristic biochemically of the aging process.
The problem of aging begins with the very food we eat to give us energy. As our cells burn that food, they also release toxic chemicals. Those chemicals, you may know them as free radicals, react with all the components of our cells, literally bombarding them millions of times per second, damaging all our cells. The result? Oxidative stress. And we all have it. The body fights back with a system of defenses. It makes two antioxidant enzymes, catalase and SOD, whose job is to gobble up the free radicals before they can harm our cells.
So, doctor, how often do I take these?
And so, here I go. With that swallow, I've just become part of a potentially landmark scientific experiment.
Doesn't taste bad.
It's called Protandim, and tests on both mice and humans have already shown that it revs up the manufacture of those good enzymes in our bodies. More enzymes, fewer free radicals to harm us. Whether that will lead to longer life is still unknown. Experiments to see if mice live longer are about to get underway, but it's a tantalizing theory.
Right now, all we know is that this preparation decreases oxidative stress. oxidative stress is not a disease, just like aging is not in itself a disease, but it's something that accompanies and is attached to many disease processes. So you can see the age-related...
Normally, oxidative stress, measured by those T-bars, increases with age. But in Dr. McCord's tests, taking just one pill of Protandim a day reversed that trend for everyone at every age, even for an 80-year-old.
They all are reduced to the level of oxidative stress that one would expect, frankly, in a newborn or a very young child.
Back to the oxidative stress levels of a child? It sounds too good to be true. Will Protandim work on me?
The scientific evidence is there. The pieces seem to make sense. The question is, does this translate into something that humans can take advantage of?
And so, ancient Eastern healing and modern Western medicine may soon be working together. High oxidative stress is associated with more than aging. It's been linked to hundreds of illnesses.
It's at the very center of many diseases. Liver disease, diabetes, emphysema, asthma. I've studied all of these. Strokes, heart attacks.
Even mental disease.
Yes.
Depression?
Alzheimer's disease, depression.
Dr. James Crapo with the National Jewish Medical Center in Denver is also researching Protandim for the company.
Are you saying that this could be a cure-all?
You're looking at something that will have a small impact, but an important impact.
We make no claims about curing any disease or preventing any disease. We hope that when enough studies are done, perhaps such claims might be able to be made in the future.
Clinical studies to assess Protandim in both diabetes and heart disease should start in 3 to 4 months. But what about my progress? After nearly 2 weeks now, it's time to get my results. Dr. McCord calculates the numbers. The result? My level of oxidative stress has declined dramatically.
45%, that's excellent.
Just look at where I fall on the graph, before and after.
Which, if extrapolated back, is the level you would see in a newborn baby.
Have we turned back the clock? Well, maybe not on the outside, but deep inside, within my cells. Yes, indeed.
Would you suggest I keep taking this supplement?
I would. I can't guarantee it's going to extend your life. I can't guarantee it's going to eliminate any diseases or cure any diseases.
But we do know that oxidative stress is part of those disease processes. I don't want to wait until I'm 80 years old and find out that I should have taken it.
For more, go to our website at abcnews.com.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Major universities and government agencies initiated and continue self-funded studies following the ABC Primetime Investigative Report you just viewed that originally aired in 2005. These studies continue to reveal more scientific evidence about Protandim's unique benefits. They are published in major scientific and medical journals. The next video will bring you up to date.
Developed after 40 years of research and exclusively for LifeVantage, Protandim is a true scientific breakthrough in anti-aging. Protandim has been reported on ABC, NBC, and PBS, featured in the Wall Street Journal, and described in CNN Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta's book, Chasing Life, The Quest for Immortality. Protandim's creator, Dr. Joe McCord, is a world-renowned scientist and a pioneer in free radical biology. Dr. McCord is the discoverer of the key anti-aging enzyme, superoxide dismutase. His role in the discovery is so significant, the enzyme is measured in McCord units. For Dr. McCord's discovery of superoxide dismutase and his contributions in free radical biology, he was awarded the Elliott Cresson Medal. This medal is awarded to distinguished inventors and scientists, putting Dr. McCord in the same company as Pierre and Marie Curie, Alexander Graham Bell, Orville Wright, and Henry Ford. Dr. Joe McCord has devoted his life's work to the study of free radicals, their role in aging, and the many problems associated with aging. Consumers spend billions every year on antioxidants in the form of food and supplements, hoping to reduce these free radicals. But antioxidants from these sources can only eliminate one free radical for every one antioxidant molecule you consume. Protandim is scientifically proven to slow cellular damage caused by free radicals. Taking one Protandim one time per day for 30 days turns on these anti-aging enzymes in your body. Your own enzymes eliminate free radicals at a rate of 1 million to 1.
I think any other supplements that are designed to be antioxidant supplements probably are no longer needed, because Protandim solves that problem in a much more effective way.
Protandim is a breakthrough poised to revolutionize the anti-aging industry. It is an entirely new and scientifically validated way to fight aging, reducing your oxidative stress levels to that of a 20-year-old after just 30 days.
We found, as many other scientists had documented, that there is a progressive increase in T-bars in your blood the older you get. When these same people took Protandim for 30 days, the age-dependent increase in lipid peroxidation was completely eliminated. After Protandim, we could no longer distinguish the 80-year-old from the 20-year-old.
Protandim is protected by 3 U.S. patents. Universities around the world continue to initiate and fund their own studies of Protandim and to evaluate how this anti-aging breakthrough can prevent and improve many of the hundreds of problems associated with aging.
Many academic scientists at a number of universities have begun studying Protandim because it represents a new tool. It represents a way of reducing oxidative stress that wasn't available before. There simply was not a good way of doing what Protandim does. Protandim interacts with the DNA in your cells and causes the cells to make more of a set of genes called survival genes. The ingredients in Protandim were actually selected because they're largely metabolized by the liver, which does not interfere with most prescription drugs, which are generally metabolized by the kidneys. So the general answer to that is yes, it is safe. The immediate benefits of Protandim are, within several days, the biochemical markers of oxidative stress begin to decrease. And while these are immediate improvements, you may not sense that these things are happening, just as you can't sense what your cholesterol level is, if it's high or low. But nonetheless, these benefits start happening within days of taking Protandim. The advantages to taking Protandim in the long term are that it protects your body from the relentless progression of free radical damage as we age. The anti-aging aspect of Protandim is one that accumulates over time, so the longer you take it, the more protection you will sustain. Missing a dose of Protandim is not a big problem. It takes about 2 weeks for the effects to go away. So if you miss it for 2 weeks, you're pretty much back to where you started from.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Good afternoon. These are on, I presume. I'd like to talk to you today, and do I have control of these slides, or is I do? Okay. Let's get through these really quick, because this is just because you have to get CMEs, and I have to tell you that I am on the Speakers Bureau for GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, and also a nutritional consultant for an HIV nutritional company named Biosource Therapeutics, which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about today. What I'd like to talk to you about is something that I find thoroughly fascinating. It is glutathione. It is one of the four endogenous antioxidants, and it is one that I must admit, despite 80,000 published articles in the English literature, through medical school internship, residency, fellowship, and a fairly long time in academic medicine, I knew nothing about. It is a very interesting molecule because it exists in an accelerated or increased energy state. The energy state is caused by the fact that it's got a free sulfhydryl group and therefore can easily donate the hydrogen to a electron and therefore quench a free radical. Now, let me tell you, because I think it's important, and it is a little bit of a divergence, but I learned about glutathione because of something that you probably all have seen in your practice, and that is a low uric acid. Now, when I was in medical school and when I was a professor of oncology, the only thing I knew about uric acid is when you had a kid that you were going to treat for leukemia, you put him on allopurinol to keep the uric acid down. I knew nothing about uric acid being low, except it kept appearing, and it appeared in about 20% of my patients, and that just didn't make sense. So I finally went into PubMed, and after stumbling around for a long time, I found out that uric acid is the last antioxidant your body uses when it's run out of everything else. When it's run out of gas, okay, it uses uric acid. Interesting. So if that's the last, the question then, what was the first? And that is where I got into glutathione. I've been coming to some of these meetings for a while, and glutathione is very important for a number of things, not all of which I'm going to go into today. But in point of fact, it has a great deal to do with not only well-being, okay, but aging well, or if you will, retarding the aging process. So I think it's very applicable. I'd like to, at the risk of repeating things that you already know, go over some of the things that glutathione is important about. Alone in the antioxidant world, okay, every other antioxidant, when it becomes oxidized, becomes itself a free radical. Glutathione doesn't. It actually recycles other antioxidants. In fact, the body considers it so important that up to 6% of the entire ATP expenditure or energy expenditure of the body may be used to synthesize and optimize glutathione levels. That's pretty impressive, 6% of the entire energy output of the body. It is also the only non-enzyme antioxidant that doesn't become a free radical and, in fact, has a very interesting corollary when it becomes oxidized, because what happens is it complexes to another spent glutathione molecule, and the compound then becomes GSSG, and GSSG has been shown in animal studies at least to promote and induce delta wave sleep. We all know the importance of that in terms of the aging process, so this, even in its used up form, functions as a very useful product. It not only functions as an antioxidant itself, but alone again in the world of antioxidants, it is an absolutely essential component of antioxidant enzymes, namely glutathione peroxidase, and most importantly, the glutathione transferases. And I bring that up because glutathione transferase abnormalities have now been associated with virtually every cancer known to man, and probably with a lot more than that. And therefore, by promoting the production of glutathione transferases through improving glutathione, we may be doing even more than I'm able to talk about right now. In addition, if that were not enough, let's keep going. It's a chelator. In fact, it's 50% as effective as oral chelation in getting rid of mercury. It has an effect on other heavy metals, but they're not as pronounced as mercury, and mercury is pretty ubiquitous in an environment, so it kind of comes as a freebie. And it detoxifies organic pollutants, perhaps the best known one of which is the 2-carbon fragment that we know as alcohol. And in fact, without glutathione, you ultimately get a hangover because you stop the process at acetaldehyde, which is phase one detox, and that in itself is a free radical, and obviously many of us may have felt the effects of that if we didn't have enough glutathione. Now, why is it important in aging? Well, these are old data, and I think they're probably not as robust as they should be, but I'll give you what is available now. Glutathione levels decrease with age. The data would suggest it's 1% a year beginning in the 20s. I think that's too little, too late, but that's only my opinion right now. I haven't proved it. There are some very interesting things, though. Age-matched normals, okay, reveal that anybody at, say, 45 who's had his first heart attack or has asthma or whatever other disease you want to use has a lower glutathione level than somebody of that age who's well. So disease causes decrease in glutathione and an accelerated decrease compared to normals. Glutathione happens to be, and this is perhaps the take-home message, it's the major protector of mitochondrial DNA. Mitochondrial DNA is that DNA within the cells that's responsible, if you will, for the electron transport chain that produces every bit of energy in your body. And we know from pathologic data that if you take a biopsy from a 90-year-old and compare it to a biopsy in a 5-year-old, the mitochondrial DNA in the 90-year-old is only 5% normal compared to the 5-year-old. So obviously we destroy our mitochondrial DNA, we destroy our energy, and we age. Maintenance of normal mitochondrial DNA is directly correlated, and it's got an R value above 9.9, with aging. So the higher your glutathione, the less you age. And I think
it's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
truth surrounds us like a lover's hand upon the heart. The very breath you gave me grows intently through the years
and becomes lost in dreams.
So let the wind blow.
True.